Hey there, if you're hearing this, you're listening to the audio version of People Pleaser on Spotify or Apple Podcast or wherever else you listen to the audio version of this show. I did an episode on the topic for today, today's topic. I did a full People Pleaser episode that's available on my YouTube channel right now, the full hour-long version. It's also available on the Patreon, where I was, you know, kind of the way that I normally do this show. Unscripted, off the top of my head. I had an outline, but I was just sort of speaking passionately and emotionally in the moment and letting things sort of flow freely like I am right now, doing this kind of pre-roll intro. And when I watched it, I didn't hate it. I felt like I liked a lot of the points that I made, but I just kind of felt like my tone was grating and frustrating and maybe unproductive. And I did another version of kind of almost the exact same show, but I made it into a YouTube video where I wrote a script for it and I slowed my pace down and calmed my demeanor down and my tone down. And I wound up liking that a lot more. So that's what I'm going to play for you today. If you'd like to see the much more souped up, angry, longer version, you can see that on my Patreon or you can see that on my YouTube right now. By the way, this podcast has a video version that lives on YouTube right now, and I personally think that the video version is getting, I think it's getting a lot better than the audio version ever has been. There's just like, there's all kinds of visual aids that I think enrich the show and make it more fun. But if you prefer to listen, you know, while you're out on a walk with your headphones or while you're driving in the car and the audio version is your thing, I completely understand that. I'll continue to release the audio version, but today's audio version is going to be a little different. It's going to be the audio from a YouTube video that I made that's on the exact same topic that this week's episode was about, the one that I did on YouTube. So, this is confusing what I'm saying. There's two of these on YouTube. There's one that's the People Pleaser episode. It's an hour long and it's unscripted. And then there's a 25-minute long scripted version, and I liked that more. So that's what I'm going to play for you today. I'm going to play the 25-minute version. And if you want the full hour-long unscripted version, you can go find it on my YouTube. And, you know, you don't even have to look at the video. You can listen to podcasts, just the audio only, from YouTube as well on your phone. Not sure if you knew that. You can just listen. If you just like listening in the car, you can also do that from YouTube. So, you know, just throwing that out there. But yeah, here's the thing. It's, from a blanket for a recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, People Pleaser, all that good stuff. Today, I'm talking about accountability for protest voters. Today, I'm trying to say my piece, my definitive refutation of the protest vote rationale. And I'm hoping to kind of put it to rest for a while and talk about other things. But here's my piece. Hope you enjoy it. All right, here we go. Hi there. Today's video is going to be a little different. Throughout the 2024 election cycle, I was obviously very vocally critical of protest voters. I've continued to be critical of protest voters as the horrors of the new Trump administration have begun to take shape. Arguing with these people, many of whom are my close friends that I love dearly, has taken a real toll on me. It's made my heart heavy and my mind a chaotic stew of anger and disappointment. I'm frankly tired of it. I'm exhausted by it. So this is the last video I'm going to be making on it for a while. This will serve as my definitive statement on it for any who are curious about why I believe what I do and who have the time and the patience to listen. I just did an episode of my podcast about this that was much less structured and kind of more freewheeling, and my goal here will be to make a video that is as specific and streamlined as possible. In this video, I'll be addressing every argument I've received from my friends and detractors in the protest voter community, and I'll be hoping to definitively make my case by soundly refuting every one of these arguments. So without further ado, let's begin. You voted for genocide. This may be the most common and most seemingly valid argument you'll hear from a protest voter. It's certainly one of the most emotionally resonant, and it comes in many forms. People will tell you that they simply couldn't sign their name to a genocide, insinuating that you could and are therefore condoning it. They'll tell you that even if you don't support it, you certainly don't seem bothered by it, because if you were, you'd be with them. This is the strength and the backbone of the protest vote rationale. The concept that genocide is one of the most inhuman acts imaginable, and any vote that does not repudiate it entirely is tantamount to complicity, is their most potent ideological justification for why they made the choice that they made. It's also a lie. It's the same tactic as when Trump supporters will disingenuously say that you support mutilating kids when what you actually support is gender-affirming care for trans kids. Or they'll disingenuously suggest that you support killing babies when what you actually support is reproductive freedom. Harris voters simply did not vote to sign off on or condone genocide. We voted for the health and safety of trans people, for the human rights and dignity of the queer community, for the protection of civil rights legislation and the continued fight for racial equality, for the safety of immigrants and their families. We voted for reproductive freedom and the advancement of women in a patriarchal power structure. We voted for economic policies that give the lower class a fighting chance at happiness. And we voted for the only viable candidate who gave the men, women, and children of Gaza a fighting chance in hell at survival. Protest voters voted for none of these things. They stood for none of these communities. They voted for their own sanctimonious egos, and I believe they should wear that shame whether they're willing to own it or not. The Democrats have no one to blame but themselves for running such a bad campaign. To win a presidential race in America, you have to have a platform that can appeal to an incredibly broad and diverse base of voters. Republicans have an advantage here because, like, 90% of their voting bloc is entirely homogenous. It's just white, heteronormative Christian people. Democrats have a much more difficult task. They have to appeal to Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, atheists, Jews, Christians, queer folk, every race, every culture, every intersectional kind of identity and ideology. And within that incredibly diverse coalition are moderates and centrists and liberals and leftists and far leftists and Republican never-Trumpers. They have to somehow design a platform that can sway as many of these voters as possible and make everyone feel like there's at least something for them on offer. The fact that the Harris-Walz campaign pulled 75 million votes in a truncated window is incredibly impressive. You think they ran a bad campaign because it wasn't a campaign that catered specifically to you, but their job is not to design a campaign to only earn your vote. It's to design one that can earn around 80 million votes from a massively diverse group of people. All the campaign needs to be at the end of the day is a better option than the alternative. It always was going to be Trump or Harris. That's just our political reality, whether you like it or not. There simply were no other options that were ever going to be competitive or realistic. So all Harris had to do was demonstrate that she was more qualified, more beneficial, more safe, and more humane than her opponent. And she did that. She did that every single day of her brief campaign. She didn't lose because she was a weak candidate. She lost because you didn't vote for her. The choices were what they were, and you chose wrong. That's all there is to it. Oh, and while we're on the topic, I believe it's utter insanity to say a candidate who pulled 75 million votes was weak when your preferred candidate couldn't crack a million votes. How can you reasonably call a campaign that was a few slim points away from winning weak when your preferred candidate wasn't even in the running? Even if Harris got every single one of the protest votes, she still would have lost. Please, I'm begging every single one of you who routinely make this argument to learn how to count. Joe Biden got 81 million votes in 2020. Harris got 75 million in 2024. That's 6 million voters who voted for Biden and not for Harris. 6 million voters who either voted third party or sat out entirely, and you have to count the ones who sat out. When you say this, I genuinely feel like you're being intentionally terrible at math to abdicate your own obvious culpability. Harris lost the popular vote by around 2 million votes. Third-party candidates polled around 3 million votes. There are even thousands of former Biden voters who filled out ballots for Trump to spite Harris. And then, of course, there were all of the people who didn't fill a ballot out at all. Those votes count too. But my state wasn't a battleground state. It was already spoken for. So my protest vote didn't actually matter. Every vote matters. Let me say that again. Every vote matters. The idea that there are states that are spoken for by either party and will never be swung is electoral college propaganda meant to disenfranchise you of your voting power. It's in the interest of the establishment powers to have voters in spoken for states that vote apathetically or not at all to maintain their broken and corrupt system. The electoral college is flat out unfair and illogical. It makes no sense to have a system where the president can be elected while losing the popular vote, that a minority of voters from a handful of battleground states can decide the terms for everyone. It's affirmative action for white, rural, conservative states. It's the only way they ever win. Because the reality is, progressive policies are more popular than conservative policies, and when progressive voters show up as a unified coalition, the numbers bear this out every single time. What happens when progressive voters in non-battleground blue states vote green or not at all is it hurts our total in the popular vote, and that matters because it costs us crucial leverage. Republicans have only won the popular vote in a presidential election three times in the last 30 years. All three times, it was because the voting coalition on the left was split, with some voters chasing a long-shot third-party option. Right now, we could have a situation where Donald Trump is a second-term president who has lost three straight popular votes. That would give us incredible fuel to begin really pushing for the abolishment of the anti-democratic electoral college. We could say, this guy has never been elected by a majority of voters, and yet, due to a broken and unfair system, he's been declared the winner in two out of the three elections that he didn't actually win. But instead, we have a situation where, for the first time in Trump's political career, he won not only the electoral vote, but the popular vote as well, and that emboldens his base and his administration. They believe they have a mandate because of that. They can falsely claim now that conservative political goals are more popular than progressive ones, and that matters. When you cast your vote for a third party because your state was spoken for, you hurt our collective leverage. You took away credence from the idea that progressive policies and ideas are more popular than far-right extremist ones, and that damages our collective goals dearly. You just want us to vote for the lesser of two evils forever. Yes, I do, because frankly, that's what voting is. You will always be, hopefully, choosing the less bad option. Every person you will ever have the privilege of voting for will be a person who has done bad things and who will continue to do bad things, who has policies you agree with and policies you really fucking don't agree with. And that's because that person will be a whole-ass human being attached to a whole-ass system of power. You will never be lucky enough to vote for an option that does no harm. Your vote will always be an act of strategic harm reduction. That's simply all there is to it. Why are you punching left, though? Just because we are in the same socioeconomic strata does not mean you are exempt from criticism. Just because we're teammates doesn't mean I can't call you out when you fuck up. Also, I just have to say, this is really rich coming from people who have spent the last 16 months disingenuously calling every Democrat voter who disagrees with them a genocidal child murderer. Maybe don't throw so many haymakers if you're gonna burst into tears the first time someone swings back. Your progressive compatriots who are criticizing criticizing your vote right now aren't just punching left because they have some delusional and misguided anger. We are your teammates who are criticizing you for the way your actions have directly harmed our team. Okay, but you should really be using your energy and platform to attack those in charge, right? Oh, I do, and I will continue to. I can chew gum and walk at the same time. I'm capable of putting ample energy and focus into multiple projects at once. It's kind of my specialty. And as far as I'm concerned, this is an admission of guilt. You hear the truth in what I'm saying, and you don't like it, so you deflect. Yeah, maybe I burned your house down, so what? I'm just a little guy. You should be mad at the fire department for not doing a better job stopping me. They're the ones with all the power. Multiple things can be true at once. There can be powerful people who made grave and criminal errors who need to be denounced and attacked, and also, we down here in the lower class can make crucial errors that need to be addressed and owned. Dude, you're like obsessed lately with attacking protest voters. Are you okay? First of all, I just want to say that whenever somebody says this to me, I find it incredibly condescending and offensive. No, I'm not okay. I'm going through a very difficult and bleak stretch. If you haven't noticed, the world is kind of a terrifying and depressing place recently, even more than usual. But what I hear when you say this is a hurt dog hollering. When I go after Trump supporters, you tell me to keep it up. Do it more. Do it louder, you say. Do it meaner. But when I try to reach you, you call it an unhealthy obsession and say that I should stop. And I think that's because what's really happening is I'm pointing at your culpability and you don't like it. You like it when I put your political opponents in the hot seat and take them to task, but when you become the subject of my criticism and ire, your tone changes and you resort to all of these underhanded and bad faith tactics to escape the situation and avoid accountability entirely. All she had to do was call for an arms embargo. Really? That's all she had to do? You just needed to hear her utter those two magic words, and then you would have done your duty to defeat Trump? Why should anyone believe you? Every other time that you said all she has to do is blank, and then she did that thing, you moved the goalpost. You weren't ever engaging in good faith. What guarantee did her campaign have that those two magic words would quell your indignant opposition and earn your support? You called Biden Genocide Joe and said you'd never vote for a war criminal like him, never mind the fact that every person who has ever held the office of president has committed war crimes. It's just kind of part of the job, unfortunately. But Biden dropped out. For the first time in this country's history, in an unprecedented move, the incumbent president bowed out of the race and made way for a more progressive candidate to take his place. And rather than acknowledge this, you said, not good enough. She's a part of his administration. She's just as guilty. We need to hear her call for a ceasefire or no deal. So she called for a ceasefire. She did it again and again and again. And instead of acknowledging her attempt to meet your terms, you said, not good enough. I don't trust her. You went as far as to start actively spreading lies about her, saying that she said in an interview that she would do nothing different than Biden on Israel and Palestine. And that was just a quote you were taking out of context disingenuously. She never actually said that. She was asked a negative question, so no change in policy, to which she responded no, and then went on to explain that a deal had to be reached for a ceasefire and a two-state solution that honored Palestinian safety and freedom. If she had answered yes to that question, then that would have been her saying no change in policy. If someone asks, so no hang tonight, and you respond, no, we should definitely hang, that means you want to hang out, not that you don't want to hang out. And after all of this, you said, well, if she could just call for an arms embargo, but you had already moved the goalpost so many times, there was no reason to believe you were negotiating in good faith. But then Biden did threaten an arms embargo, and you said, too little, too late. The reality is, you had one candidate repeatedly calling for a ceasefire while advocating for the safety and self-determination of the Palestinian people, and another candidate who was clear that his mission was to turn Gaza into a resort and to forcibly remove every last Palestinian from the region. And you were playing fast and loose with all of those lives, refusing to take meaningful action unless your very specific and constantly moving terms were met. Her whole campaign was funded by AIPAC. Kamala Harris raised $997 million. $5 million of those dollars were from sources that have ties to Israel. You're just wrong on this one. I have nothing else to say, but you're just wrong. Also, I've said it many times before, but it bears repeating. The only reason Jill Stein didn't have AIPAC money is because they weren't offering her any money. She absolutely would have taken the money if they were offering her some. You can't expect Arab Americans to vote for people who are actively bombing their families. This is a great and excellent point, and I don't expect Arab Americans to vote any particular way. Arab Americans can vote however they feel they need to, and I won't judge them for that. The pain they have experienced and continue to experience is valid and earned, and I have nothing but the utmost empathy and sympathy for their heartache. I share their pain, and I join them in their grief. Two things to point out, though. One, the Democrats have only ever voted to supply Israel with defensive weapons. It's the Republican Party who advocates supplying them with offensive artillery. And yes, there is a meaningful distinction between those two things. And two, there are very few disenfranchised groups who could claim to have more cause to hate America and the American institutions of power than Black Americans. Very few disenfranchised and marginalized communities have been more consistently brutalized and dehumanized throughout our country's history. Very few groups would be more justified in sitting out and refusing to participate in any form of civic duty. And you know what Black Americans do? They fucking show up and they vote. They understand that their vote isn't a seal of approval. It's a necessary and strategic chess move about who they'd rather fight with. Chapel Roan honestly ate when she said that she'd vote for Harris, but she wouldn't endorse her because she's right. A vote isn't an endorsement. It's not your way of saying that you approve of this candidate and everything they've ever done. And Black voters have always understood this. There's a very obvious reason why pro-Palestinian protesters demonstrated exclusively at Harris rallies and never at Trump rallies. And it's because they understood that they were safer at Harris rallies. It's because they knew they'd have a better shot at potentially being heard and considered at a Harris rally. And it's because they knew that they would have quite literally been in physical danger at a Trump rally. You don't have to like Democrats to vote for them. You don't have to approve of how they've treated you or your loved ones. You don't have to approve of any of the things that they do. You simply need to believe that you'd have a better chance of advocating for your safety and the safety of your community under Democratic leadership than you would under Republican leadership. You can say that you refused to sign your name to a genocide all you want. You still have to answer for the reality of what you did sign your name to. Did your choice make the people that you care most about safer or less safe? Did it increase or decrease the likelihood that you will be able to effectively advocate for marginalized and vulnerable communities? Maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong. Who cares? We should be focusing on coming together, not widening the divide. I agree. We need to come together. And step one is accountability. If we are on a football team and you're a receiver who runs the wrong route on the game-winning play and costs the team the game, you need to be able to look at the tape and say, this one's on me. I was supposed to zig and I zagged. The left side of the field was wide open and I ran right. We need to know that you know exactly what went wrong and how to fix it going forward. Right now you're saying, but it wasn't my fault, it was the coach's fault for calling the wrong play. I told them I didn't like that play and they called it anyway. If they wanted me to run the right route, They should have called the play I told them to call. But unfortunately, that's not how any of this works. It doesn't matter that you didn't like the play. The play was what the play was. You knew what it was. You knew what you had to do to help the team, and you deliberately didn't do it. Whether you liked the play or not doesn't fucking matter. It's still on you. Now, maybe I'm losing some of you with the sports analogy. It also might not be an analogy that has the appropriate potency or stakes, so let's try another one. We're a bomb squad. We send in remote robots to disarm bombs. In this scenario, our commanding officers have sent us into an area that has 20 active bombs that are all set to explode, and we only have time to dismantle one of them. You're livid about this. I'm livid about this. You can't believe that the commanding officers aren't doing everything they can to disarm all 20 bombs. What's worse is that the people using the bombs got the money to make them from our commanding officers. We're both pissed off about this. We've both got very legitimate grievances here. We've got very sound and very valid reasons to be upset, but the fact remains, we still have a chance to disarm at least one of the bombs and save at least some lives. At the moment of impact, you choose to deliberately cut the wrong wire and let the bomb explode as a fuck you to the higher-ups. Despite an absolute shit sandwich of a situation, we had a chance to reduce harm. We had a chance to do at least some good, and you deliberately threw that chance away. Now we're heading out to disarm more bombs, and I need to know, as your partner, if you are aware of what you've done. Are you aware that you cut the wrong wire? Are you willing to own that choice and everything that comes with it? Are you willing to own that you made a bad situation worse? And are you committed to working with me going forward to reduce harm? Or are you just going to do it again? I have to know these things before I can trust you again. I have to know that we are on the same page if we're going to have any shot of working together in a productive and useful way going forward. And I already know what you're going to say. You're going to say, well, Austin, in this analogy, you'd be the guy who's voting to reinstate the commanding officers who gave us those shitty orders. And that's because the only other option for a commanding officer on offer is a guy who's saying, you know what, I want to triple the amount of bombs in the region, and I also want to get rid of the department that disarms those bombs. This person wants to completely remove any chance we have of disarming even one bomb. And if that wasn't bad enough, they also want to make life exponentially worse for all of the people that you and I care about here at home. This isn't about my vanity. It's not about me just needing to be right because I like being right. It's quite literally the opposite. It's about your vanity and your dangerous inability to even approach the possibility that you may have ever made a mistake. I know I'm not always the nicest. I know my bedside manner could use some improvement. I own that. I'll work on it, I promise. Right now, I'm just focused on saying what's true as often and as plainly as possible. As I wrap this video up, I want to be really candid and unapologetically honest. I think the most frustrating thing about protest voters is this. Your hearts are mostly in the right place. You know that genocide is bad, which is a good thing to know. It's a humane thing to know. The problem is, it often seems like that's the only thing you know. You seem to have no meaningful grasp of nuance or political strategy. You know that dead Palestinian children is bad, and you're correct about that, but you can't seem to grasp that you've made the one issue you care about exponentially worse while simultaneously selling out every marginalized and vulnerable group in America. I'm not saying this to attack you. I'm not saying this to hurt you. I'm simply saying it because it's the truth and because it's important. My sincere hope is that this message can find its way to your heart. Maybe you won't be ready to hear it today. Maybe today, my tone will have you still on the defensive. Maybe you'll still need time to process and consider everything that's happened. I know these things can be hard to hear, but I hope that eventually you can hear them. I believe you need to hear them and understand them if we are going to move forward to build a better future together.